at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. Otherwise, we get a bit lonely here at the KUCI studios. And we're pretty darn friendly here at Talk Animals, especially so with callers. So please phone us. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's right. It's .net, folks. .net. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another invigorating edition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources, but we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been about 9 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been enormously fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, ranging just in recent weeks from comedian, actress, activist Janine Garofalo to Dr. Dee Boersma, one of the world's most renowned experts on penguins, to Alan Young, who played Wilbur Post on Mr. Ed. Not only are the shows featuring those interviews archived on our nifty website at www.talkinganimals.net, but our string of exceptional guests continues today when we speak with Dr. Monica Dietrich, an Anaheim-based animal communicator who indeed communicates with animals, then translates the exchanges for the humans who live with those animals. And if that sounds mildly nutty, or at least spurs some skepticism, I know what you mean. So as preparation for this interview, I paid for a Dr. Monica session with our cat Otis and was quite struck by the accuracy of the results. So we'll hear about Dr. Monica, her background, how she goes about communicating with animals, the session with Otis, and more when we hear that interview with Dr. Monica in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, on Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news, and I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, observations, and of course, any stories you might have spotted. It'd all be most welcome. The phone number is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Turning now to important developments recently in animal news. Typically these are local, regional, national, occasionally international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss. We'll also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, all right then. Let's talk turkey, as it were. Starting off, as we typically do, talking about tiger rescue, but with a slightly different wrinkle. Trying to change it up a little bit, but the importance of the story hasn't diminished at all. So I'm just going to read part of a release I got recently that at least suggests a pretty cool, happy ending to what has long been a fairly dark, unpleasant tale. So I'll just read a little bit of this to you. One of the most tragic stories of wild animal abuse in history will have a happy ending, reports the Fund for Animals, which has been responsible for the rescue, rehabilitation, and daily care for 75 big cats over the past year. In November 2002, the California Department of Fish and Game seized 10 tigers from a pseudo-sanctuary in Colton, California called Tiger Rescue after finding them in filthy cages without water and suspecting the owner of illegal breeding. The fund assisted the state by caring for the tigers and placed them in accredited facilities. In April 2003, officials executed a search warrant on the tiger rescue owner's residence and discovered 90 dead tiger carcasses, including 58 baby tigers dead in a freezer. 13 other cats were found barely alive. Then the state seized control of Tiger Rescue, where 54 big cats remained. The Fund for Animals took over care. It cost more than $500 per day for the cats who survived one of the worst incidents on record. Once rehabilitated, all but 39 tigers were placed in accredited sanctuaries. The remaining cats have since lived at the now defunct Tiger Rescue property under round-the-clock care by the fund's Chuck Tracy, who, by the way, is you know, probably one of the coolest, most heroic figures I've encountered in any part of my life, you know, much less just the animal world. And just a rotating battalion of 400 volunteers. And I'll come back to that in a point in making a plea, actually, to get you involved. But anyways, Continuing, Michael Markarian, president of Fund for Animals, explains the tiger rescue property was deplorable. Our staff and volunteers set up a triage, building shaded areas, safeguarding the pens that were dangerous to the cats, and most importantly, providing medical treatment, food, water, and professional 24-hour attention to rehabilitate them. The fund raised $250,000 last fall to have a sanctuary built for the remaining 39 cats who had not been placed. PAWS, which is the Performing Animal Welfare Society, came on board and committed to create a new 10-acre tiger habitat with dens, trees, and swimming pools on their San Andreas, California property with the money raised by the fund. This week, construction begins at PAWS, and later this spring, the tigers will be transported by the fund and PAWS to their permanent home, where they will live the rest of their lives under proper care. According to Pat Derby, director of PAWS, quote, "We are committed to providing the best quality of care to these animals for the rest of their lives. It is frightening to think there are many similar stories to theirs all over the county, because of the lack of enforcement of existing laws. Sadly, the tiger rescue facility had been inspected by regulatory agencies and seems to have fallen through the cracks. While these big cats were fortunate that the fund and PAWS came to the rescue, unfortunately, there are over 10,000 tigers privately owned in this country, double the number of those in the wild in Asia. Most are bred and abused in order for their quote-unquote owners to try to quote-unquote domesticate them. 90% die within the first 2 years of captivity." So, again, a promising, if not happy, end to a really gruesome story with tiger rescue. But it's still going to be some time before those 39 or so remaining big cats get relocated. So what I'd like to urge you to do, if you think you could carve out any time, if you're on spring break, let's say, you've got a weekend day free, you somehow find yourself with a weekday free, even better. If you could head out to Tiger Rescue, it's in Colton, California, which in broad strokes, sort of by Ontario, broader strokes by San Bernardino. But every single day, people volunteer, drive out there from parts of San Diego, parts of Ventura, Santa Barbara, Northern California, other states now, and help out. And it's really cool. I've been out there, not as much as I would like, but I've been out there a bit, and it's an amazing experience. You basically help clean the big cats' enclosures, make sure they're comfortable. You feed them, you water them, especially when it's hot. You make sure their water tanks and everything else is cool and neat and clean. And, if any other kind of little repairs or things need to be done to their enclosures and anything else to make them more comfortable, you do that too. So it's a really, really cool day. And if there's any way you could carve out a day to do that, please email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com, and we'll hook you up with the people who kind of coordinate the volunteer effort. So that's Tiger Rescue. Moving on, this is less a news item than maybe something to ponder, if not to discuss. Saw this in yesterday's column that runs every week in the New York Times Magazine called The Ethicist. And if you're not familiar, basically people write in with sort of ethical dilemmas or questions, and the columnist, the ethicist, Randy Cohen, gives his response on the ethical direction that people should pursue. But this was interesting on a number of levels, partly because he didn't seem to have a clear-cut answer, and in fact seemed to be seeking one. So I thought we might read at least the question, some of the answer, and then see if you guys have any thoughts, or at least just want to chew on it. So it starts out, "Cleaning out the closets of the house we inherited from my husband's great aunt, we found several fur coats. It didn't seem right to stuff them in the Goodwill bag, so we kept them. I would never buy a new fur, but is it wrong to wear an old one I didn't pay for as a parody of fashion-conscious women who do?" She says parenthetically, "Does parody count if I'm the only one who knows it's parody? If it's wrong to wear the furs, what should I do with them?" This is from Hattie Fletcher, which that alone I liked. So his answer, or at least some of it, I may not read it all, but anyways, it starts off, "You should certainly not wear a new fur. A case can be made for some exploitation of animals as food or an important medical research." That alone might be enormously arguable, debatable. But anyways, continue with what he said. "When there is no meaningful alternative and when their suffering is minimized." Ditto. "But there is no justification for harming animals to make something as frivolous as a fur coat. An old fur, however, is a different matter, although not for the reasons you offer. It's insignificant that the fur was a gift. The animals that suffered don't care who pays the bill. And you are rightly wary of the parody defense, too, easily invoked by those who, for example, construct a racist parade float and, when criticized, say it's satire. How does an ordinary fur suddenly become a parody of itself? Are the words, 'I am heartless and vain,' shaved into the back? Now, a coat made of live weasels or raw veal, ... A more persuasive rationale for keeping the fur is that an attic coat can be grandfathered in It already exists. You do no good by tossing it in the trash. You do no obvious harm by wearing it. Except this. Appearing in fur announces that doing so is acceptable. You're voting with your feet. But the coat is much too long for you. You're wearing the great aunt's fur. It does not injure any animals, but it does injure us. It coarsens our sensibilities as it declares our values. Thus, if we concede the moral high ground to the fur is murder, or at least wanton cruelty crowd, you may not wear any new fur, but you may use, discreetly, privately, an old fur, a found fur. If everyone follows that rule, the fur trade withers. Use it how you ask? Use it how, you ask? Make it into fur socks, or a bathroom rug, or an unseen lining for a cloth coat. Utility without propaganda. And perhaps readers can suggest other uses for this old fur. Ideas can be sent to this column. So, yeah, if you want to, in fact, you can respond to this directly to him. Just email theethicist@newyorktimes.com. But if you have any thoughts in the meantime on that you'd like to discuss now here on Talking Animals, it's 949-824-5824. Or looking at your phone pad, strictly non-numerically. Well, at least partially non-numerically. I'm not even sure what I'm saying at this point. It's 949-UCI-KUCI. But it's probably another news item or two, and then we may get to more later if we have time, but I definitely want to get to our interview with Dr. Monica. But one important thing along a very related note is, we talked about this the last couple weeks on the show, but there is something coming up this Sunday called the Concert for Compassion, and it's a benefit for the Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty, and that's an organization dedicated to ending the suffering of animals inside product testing laboratories. So this concert is going to be at Irvine's Oak Canyon Ranch on March 28th. The lineup includes The Used, Goldfinger, Sugar Colt, Story of the Year, Ecstatic Lullaby, STUN, The Kinnison, Wagner, Mosley's, Anatomy of a Ghost, and members of Good Charlotte. Now, tickets are $20, and frankly, I would love to see you do the right thing and cough up the dough. I do have a pair as part of the Talking Animals Spread the Word on a Cool Cause effort to give away, and hopefully even if you do get these, you'll get there and you'll donate some dough and help the cause other ways. So first of all, the website to find out more about the concert and the cause is concertforcompassion.com, but we'll jump into our quick quiz question, and the winner, if you guess this quiz question, it's a true-false thing, it's very simple and easy. We always have cool prizes, but this week what we'll do is if you call in first with the correct answer, you'll win a pair of tickets to the Concert for Compassion this Sunday, the 28th, at the Irvine Oak Canyon Ranch. And again, really cool cause, bunch of great bands. So here's the question simply. True false. Caged parrots were kept in the Eiffel Tower to warn of approaching aircraft long before the enemy planes could be heard or seen by humans. Sort of animal-related, but history-related as well. So it's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. If you're the first one to call in correctly with the answer to this question, true or false? Caged parrots were kept in the Eiffel Tower to warn of approaching aircraft long before the enemy planes could be heard or seen by humans. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Again, we may come back to some news items later, but I do want to get to our interview shortly. We still have to step into the Comedy Corner. So, but in the meantime, if there are ever any news stories or announcements or events you'd like to bring to our attention, including an event you're holding, a fundraiser, something animal-related, of course, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. Indeed, today's guest, Dr. Monica, is thanks largely, really, to one of our regular listeners, Julie, bringing Dr. Monica to our attention. So we want to thank her for that. And anyway, again, the email here is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check that site out at www.talkinganimals.net. That's .net, folks, .net. And join the email list. We can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows we've done, assorted photographs and articles, lots of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around. It's, again, talkinganimals.net. It's now time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which is always, of course, involves an animal-oriented piece of comedy. This is Eddie Izzard with a snippet of a wonderful, very long bit called Mad European Cows on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
But you never see a seal that's bad, do you? You never see a seal that, oh, all right. Sorry, it's just not my thing. I thought, give me camp three. Then they're just phenomenal. I think that was God or Mother Nature or the God Chaos saying, okay, seals, give them blubber to keep them warm, fins to move them along, slippy, slidey shape. Good with balls, I think I'll put it here. And it could be other animals have secret things they're good at, like tigers. Might be good with banjos. But no one's thrown a banjo to a tiger. Bang, 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 bang. Bang, 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 bang. Ding, 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 ding. Whoa, I'm a tiger. So that feels, and then swans can kill you with their arms, apparently. But I don't know how they do it, because it doesn't quite work. But I think it's their beaks. I think they sharpen their beaks, and they'll take your head off. And cows are pretty...
All right, that's Eddie Izzard on today's Comedy Corner. With a slice of a much longer bit called Mad European Cows, taken from his CD entitled Circle, the Comedy Corner, is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, and again, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live, at least typically, on the internet at www.kuci.org, and some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you perhaps got through there through our nifty website, which is talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Dr. Monica Dietrich, an Anaheim-based animal communicator, who, as the title suggests, communicates with animals, and then she translates the exchanges for the humans who live with those animals. As I said earlier, in preparation for this interview, I paid for a Dr. Monica session with our cat, Otis, a truly great, extraordinarily smart cat. He's about 12 or so, and experiencing a few ailments, not uncommon in a cat that age. But still, I was pretty blown away by the accuracy of what Dr. Monica reported that Otis supposedly said to her. So we'll hear about that and more. And so in an interview recorded just on Friday, this is Dr. Monica on Talking Animals here on KUCI. Okay, joining us today on Talking Animals is Dr. Monica. Welcome to Talking Animals, Dr. Monica.
Thank you, Duncan. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
And as I've told our listeners, or I will, we're, of course, pre-recording this for Monday's show, but, of course, you're an animal communicator, and I guess let's just start with the basics. What is an animal communicator?
Well, an animal communicator is anybody that is able to receive information from the animals. The important thing to understand here is how do we receive communication? For years, we have been instructed that the only form of communication is verbal. That means you have to speak to someone in whatever language that is to be able to communicate your intentions, your feelings, emotions, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, the very first form of communication was done and is still done today through telepathy over long distances.
Okay.
People used to communicate. Tribe members, for instance, used to communicate over long distances by way of mental telepathy.
All right.
What we do with our animals is basically the same, but instead of hearing voices, what happens to me in particular is I see pictures. And the picture is a universal language. So it's my interpretation of the picture as I try to translate to the human what it is that the animal is actually saying or feeling, whether it's emotionally or physically.
Okay. And maybe this is an appropriate moment to say that probably the term that more, is more immediately recognizable to most folks in terms of what you're describing would be pet psychic. But is this an okay term, or is this a disrespectful term?
Well, I disagree with the term pet psychic, not only because of the connotation that it gives, but because it's not entirely accurate.
Okay.
We are known to use the term psychic, or rather when you go to a psychic, mm-hmm. you are going to learn about a future event.
Okay.
Right? You want to know what is it going to happen if I do this, if I go here, if I go there, whatever.
Okay.
It is a future event. As an animal communicator, I'm not telling you a future event. In fact, most of the questions that I am asked are on past events.
Right.
What happened before? What happened before this animal came into my life? What happened that made you sick? Things like that. So I don't want to be termed a psychic because
sure.
I don't talk about their future.
So it's beyond sort of a disrespectful or almost kind of slang. It's really inaccurate.
To me, it is inaccurate.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it all depends on what people term or think of as a psychic.
Sure. Well, along those lines, I mean, I just wonder, and then I, of course, want to get into some more specifics, of course, about what you do. But just, I mean, there does seem to be a good handful or more, really, of animal communicators out there. Did someone like Dr. Sonia, let's say, who for a time at least was on Animal Planet and I think was, you know, labeled, for better or worse, a pet psychic, was that good or bad for the field of animal communicators like yourself?
Oh, I think that was great because it opened the door to a lot of people.
Well, so, Okay, we had a little glitch there, but we're back with Dr. Monica, and we had just left off asking if you felt if someone like Dr. Sonia on the Animal Planet and labeled really clearly a pet psychic was sort of good or bad for the field of animal communicators.
I think that it was a great thing that Sonia Fitzpatrick was able to be on television and show a lot of people that communication with animals is not only possible, but it is done all the time by people like us
mm-hmm.
that have been born remembering disability. I don't call it anything else than a remembrance. This is something that our ancestors were able to do on a regular basis, and we have forgotten how to do this. I just happened to be born with the ability to remember, and it came to me easy, and it was a common day thing for me to be able to communicate with animals, as well as Sonia. We both have the same kind of background on this.
I see. Well, maybe that's a really good time to sort of get into a bit of your history. Maybe you could tell us about your early years in Argentina, and I believe you kind of realized you had this ability at a very early age.
Yes, it was very early, but it could have been earlier than that. Actually, I was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Right.
And this is a very cosmopolitan place. All you see is high-rises, apartment buildings, and at that time, animals were not allowed in apartment buildings, so I did not live next to dogs or cats. It was very strange for me to be able to see an animal. So by the time that I was 8, I was taken as an outing to a farm so that we could meet farm animals.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was given the grand tour of the farm, I realized that animals were talking to me. They were sending me images with information, and I knew things that it was impossible for me to know. I knew what the dog had done the night before. I knew what the pig was telling me about her piglets. And I thought, gosh, well, everyone is supposed to do this. I just haven't been around animals long enough to know. But I was 8 that day.
Okay, so you were 8 years old. And so what your conclusion, reasonably speaking, of course, was that it wasn't that it was unusual, it was just that this was your first real exposure to animals. You thought everybody probably had the same experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
I thought, oh, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is cool. Talking to animals is cool.
Sure.
But then when I voice what happened to me, and none other than to some of my cousins, and I was told that I was weird or crazy, then I realized very quickly that this was not something that was common, and that I was told that I was making things up. And so I stopped talking about it altogether for the next 10 years of my life.
Really?
Yes.
Just because of the sort of ridicule or at least skepticism that you faced?
Absolutely, because I wanted to fit in. I just wanted to be the same as all little girls. I didn't want to be special. I didn't want to be different. And I was telling myself through these 10 years, it was not happening. I was making things up. It was not happening. And I was receiving the information and putting it away someplace in my mind where I didn't have to think about it.
So you were still, if I follow you, receiving those same images and the same communications, but you just were sort of denying it or just not doing anything about it, because for that period you just wanted to sort of set that aside and just be like a regular kid.
Exactly.
Okay. And then after those 10 years, then it sounds like something changed where you sort of embraced it more.
After 10 years, I moved to the United States.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's the fact that I was so far away from my homeland and my family that more things started happening to me more often, almost on a daily basis, to the point that I couldn't put it back in my mind and say, forget it. It wasn't letting me forget it because it was happening so often.
Mm.
So I figure I am going crazy.
Okay.
And I need to seek some help, and I didn't know who to ask questions. Who do you go to say, I hear things?
Right, but no, more to the point that animals are speaking to me. Right,
right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
So I decided I was going to go to the library and start checking out books until I found one person in the world that could do the same thing I did. And I didn't find it. But what I did find was a lot of people that were talking about what telepathy was, the ability to communicate over long distances.
Mm-hmm.
And in reading about it, I realized, well, this is something like what I do, but instead of hearing words, I see pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what I'm going to call it, picture telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I coined that term.
I see. And so at that point, then, did you start sort of practicing, for lack of a better term, or unofficially, were you, you know, engaging in communication with animals for friends or family or clients even, or how did that?
That's how I started. By the time that I was 20, I had friends that had animals, and I would tell them things off and on. And especially if they had a problem or if they have a physical ailment, and they were very surprised. So I knew that I had the clue of what was happening. I just didn't know that there was a call for it, that there was going to be maybe an industry or that I would be working in that in the future. I just thought that it was a gift, that I would use it as a hobby.
And calling it a gift kind of makes me think, I mean, is it something that you were able to develop over time the way, say, an athlete or a musician, you know, often develops their gift or talent? Or, I mean, is there a particular training, for example, or is it just you kind of have this ability and you just, you know, sort of keep doing it over time? But is there anything more specific you can do to kind of hone it or make it more refined in any way?
Well, to me, one thing is to have the ability.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to understand the process. You have to understand what is going on in your mind and try to kind of separate the feelings that are yours from the feelings that are coming from the animal. And in doing that, it takes a lot of practice.
Sure.
And I always say to my clients and people that want to learn to do what I do is, you can be born with a very fine tuned ear for sounds or for notes, to where you can sit down and start playing the piano beautifully just from listening for a piece and copy that down. But you will never be a concert pianist unless you spend 8 hours a day practicing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with me. If I don't practice every single day, I lose my touch.
Wow, interesting. I wouldn't imagine it would be that sort of fragile, you know, a quality.
It is something that you need to practice all the time.
Hmm.
And you need to be aware of how things feel to you so that you can express it into words. It's very difficult.
Sure.
The process of bringing things as a picture and then feeling it into your body and then saying it in words is very hard.
And how long now, overall, would you say you've been doing this kind of animal communication?
I have been doing it professionally. That means people pay me to do these for the last 15 years.
Okay.
But, of course, I have been doing it regularly since I was about 20.
I see. And is it primarily sort of dogs, cats, and birds, or can you communicate with other animals? Or
I can communicate with any animal that has the ability to either live in a home with the humans or have a relationship with humans.
Okay, so it's not, you couldn't go on safari, let's say, in Africa and communicate with an elephant that you saw, for example.
Well, I'm sure that I could communicate something.
Okay.
But I will still be prey to that animal no matter how much I try to communicate.
Right.
Not to eat me.
Right. Okay, So it seems like the key, sort of trait is that they have a relationship with the human, and that's part of what gets communicated between that animal and you.
Because my job really is to help the human
mm-hmm.
understand what their animal, their pet, is trying to tell them. I'm not saying that only pet animals are able to communicate. Everyone is able to communicate,
sure.
even the wild animals. But what is the communication about is
right.
what's important.
Of course, that's the kind of the other factor, I would guess. So okay, then let's maybe walk us through a typical session by way of the recent one that you conducted with our cat, Otis. So when you first get there, and again, you do a couple, well, actually three, but really two main ways in terms of in person with animals. And one is that you'll come to someone's house, as you came to our house to speak with Otis, or people can come to your house, and it's obviously a less expensive fee.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if I understand correctly, you're able to do something comparable by way of photos, even emailed photos, so someone could be in Missouri just as much as they could be in Costa Mesa
exactly.
and have a similar kind of experience. So,
yes.
But having said that, okay, so let's just walk through at least where it is in person as it was with ours. So you come in, you meet the animal, and then kind of take us through sort of at least the initial preparation.
Very good. Now, when I meet the animal, if it's a cat, like Otis, for mm-hmm. example, the only thing that I do is see them in person. I don't have to hold them. I don't have to be handling them while we are doing the consultation.
Mm-hmm.
Just that little hi, how are you? Maybe I touch the top of their head.
Mm-hmm.
If they are nice, of course, they will come to me and snuggle up to me, but it
sure.
depends on the animal.
Mm-hmm.
So with Otis, I came in, I offer him my finger, which is the way that you greet cats,
okay.
so that they can smell me.
Sure.
And then I touch him briefly on top of the head, and then I sat down next to him. I didn't touch him for the rest of the session,
right.
but he was next to me. So the first thing that I do is I tell the animal who I am. I introduce myself, and I say something like, I'm going to be your translator. Please take advantage of this day, and you can tell us anything that you want, because we're here for you to listen to what you have to say. It is very relaxing for an animal to hear that anything that they say will be heard and translated into words that their human can understand.
Yeah, I'm sure someone will probably say, thank God, not a minute too soon, right? I've been trying to get across
this. I've been trying to tell you this for a
yeah.
long time. And it's very interesting because I always ask the humans to write down some notes or
mm-hmm.
some questions
sure.
that they would want their animal to address.
Yeah.
And usually the animal will come up with something in the beginning that will address exactly either question number one or number two. So that is very high on the agenda for the humans, and it's a validation that is also very interesting. important, I'm sorry,
sure.
important for the animal as well.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to sort of, you know, get into to some of the specifics of our session. But and you kind of touched on this when you, in your initial description of how things work, but how is it that, I mean, I think you kind of likened what you receive from the animal as like short, like visual clips, almost like a movie preview. Is that, so is it literally, you know, that kind of cinematic in terms of what you're receiving?
Yes. I know it's hard to believe it, but either I get a picture, like I'm looking at a picture album, and the picture, for instance, does not have a time frame. It's just a picture. It could have been 5 days ago, 5 months ago, 5 years ago.
Sure.
So I don't really know how to place the picture in time. And that's why the questions are important, because if the picture is in answer to a question that the human formulated, then it's easier for me to know, oh, okay, this is in answer to this question. But other than that, in the beginning, for instance, when I do not have a question, what I get is almost like a clip of a movie. It runs in front of me for about 10 seconds, and I liken that to going to the theater and seeing a preview of an upcoming film.
Sure.
That's exactly how it feels to me. I'm sitting down, and this preview is running in front of me, and it tells me a little story.
Hmm.
So is this story the one that I have to translate and put into words and make it personal, so that the human can understand that it is from the point of view of their animal. Now, it's funny because sometimes I refuse to give the correct translation because I think that it is so off the chart that no one is going to believe me.
Hmm.
So I wait for another picture, but the picture never comes in. The same picture rewinds and plays again as if a person were to repeat it, you know, over and over until I get it, and then I can't, since I can't move forward, I have to say, well, this is what I'm being told.
Oh, interesting. So, in other words, until you deal with that particular vision clip, whatever you're likening it to, you can't move on to receive another one.
That's right. That happens to me many times.
Wow.
And it's because I process the information in my mind, and I say to myself, oh, this is ridiculous, this doesn't make sense, this is not something that a cat would say or a dog would say, and I refuse to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I refuse, they say, no, I'm not talking to you until you translate this.
We're not moving on.
Right, right. We're not moving forward.
Well, for example, like, and you kind of mentioned this a moment ago, that it's not uncommon for, you know, high priority, I guess, issues or questions for the person are similarly high priority or important for the animal. For example,
yeah.
when you met with Otis, I mean, one of the first things you got from him is that he was having a problem with his eyesight, and that,
yeah,
one eye, in fact, more than the other, and that his sense of smell had diminished. And indeed, as a byproduct of diminished kidney functioning, which unfortunately often plagues older cats, his blood pressure, off and on in the last couple of years or so, had become elevated, and unfortunately that had hampered his vision, and in one eye definitely more seriously than the other. So I don't know, on the other hand, why his sense of smell is less acute, but that actually was a fairly recent phenomenon, and I mean, our vet doesn't even know about that. So the fact that, you know, that he was saying all those things to you, I mean, the vision thing was notable, but the smell thing, I mean, outside, I think people live at our house, no one knows about that.
Right,
so,
and that's so important for you to say, that as I came to your house, the only question that I ask you is, how old is Otis, and how long has he been with you? And I had no idea, no background information on him, on you, or anything at all. In fact, if I remember correctly, Duncan, I went to your home and I didn't even remember that you had the radio show.
Right. No, which was pretty interesting. But I mean, that's I guess we should also tell our listeners that you that's a measure of how far ahead that you're booked, because when I found out about you and that you were local, that you're based in Anaheim and stuff, and wanted to see about having you on the show, I first, of course, thought the important thing was to have a session, pay for a session with you first. So, but you were booked at that point, like,
yes,
I think 5-6 weeks ahead. So,
mm-hmm,
no, it was no wonder that it probably didn't, you know, wasn't something you recalled. But anyway, so back to that, like, so So, okay, Otis is sort of communicating to you about his vision, and one eye is even worse than the other, and the smell. I mean, to the extent you can articulate it, how does that look as one of these kind of visual or movie kind of clips? I mean, how does that information, you know, look when you're, you know, receiving that from him?
And you know what? That is a $1 million question.
Yeah,
because
okay.
Everyone wants to know, yeah, how is it that I receive the images?
Yeah.
Well, the images is they're also combined with feelings, emotions, whether it's physical or otherwise. So the only thing that I can tell you is that at that moment, I became Otis, meaning I felt how he felt. So I couldn't smell things, and I couldn't see things, and all these, I was doing it with my eyes closed. I got the feeling in my own body of how he felt.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and another element that was particularly kind of notable, I think, that day of your sort of conversation was in asking Otis how he felt about everyone in the house, namely my girlfriend, our baby, the other cat, myself. When he was responding about my girlfriend, your translation not only included surmising that the baby, you know, is adopted, which he is, and which, you know, you had met the baby and Colleen as being in a session. And I guess you could, looking at the baby, you could probably guess that he wasn't necessarily our biological child. Maybe not, but that's less the point, because the other part of that response that you got from Otis included some info about sort of a tough time my girlfriend had gone through, which I don't really want to get into on the radio necessarily, but it was eerily sort of dead on.
Thank you.
And
interestingly enough, that was exactly the picture that I kept getting, and I kept saying, no, don't be silly. How can you say to someone, your baby's adopted and I've been having these problems with mom?
Mm-hmm.
And I refused to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept sending me this picture over and over again, to the point that I knew that if I didn't translate that, the session would have been ended at that moment.
Hmm.
And I didn't want to do that to you because I knew you had a lot of questions. So
sure.
I regrettably decided that, oh my gosh, you know, I have to say that because he's not budging.
Hmm. Interesting. So that's exactly what you're saying earlier. Like, that was one of those things that if you tried to skip over it, that you wouldn't be able to. Like, you just wouldn't get anything more from him because he was insistent that you kind of communicate that.
Exactly, because it was important for him not only to let you know that he was aware of other people's feelings,
mm-hmm,
but he wanted to validate to you that this was him talking, because
yeah,
there was no way that I would have known.
Right, right. Well, and other things, too, that were just kind of smaller and simpler, but still quite right, that, you know, that he said that he had moved into a bigger house where he lives now from a very little place, which is absolutely right, that he's bothered by the great increase in noise at the house, which I think by by all, you know, accounts pretty much just refers to the baby crying and other, you know, baby-related sounds,
mm-hmm,
and that as a result, he likes to spend more secluded time than he used to, which is also absolutely right. And that he wishes I'd spend more time with them, like I used to before the baby arrived, which, you know, there's definitely been a notable drop in that, which, by the way, since you were there that day, I've you know, totally stepped that up, because I realized, you know, even though it was, like, stupid not to otherwise, that, of course, swept up in the baby, and he's a newborn or whatever, but I just thought, you know what, you know, he's absolutely right, whether you came over that day or not, I should have realized it, but, I mean, so I've stepped that up, and things seem better, but... But yeah, it's really interesting. And then one other sort of quick thing too that was interesting as an offshoot is that, as we talked about some cats and other things from where he used to live in Florida before he moved here, including another cat that was my girlfriend's you know, beloved cat, Benny. And so you ended up, when we were actually going to ask Otis how he felt about Benny, you didn't really get much from Otis, but you actually heard, when I brought you a picture of Benny, you actually heard directly from Benny.
Yes.
And he was saying some things that, of course, made my girlfriend start crying, because it was so dead on about, like, how, you know, he was a big, kind of crazy-looking, I mean, crazy just because he was, like, 20-something pounds, but, I mean, mm-hmm, male, and yet you, one of the things you cited that he was that you're getting from him is that he also had a very feminine side and he was very motherly.
Yes.
And then in fact that he was very motherly with Otis, which is exactly right. And again, such an odd detail to just, you know, pick out of you know, thin air otherwise, you know.
Exactly.
So, anyway, but let me ask you this, Dr. Monica, because we're probably running a little, you know, close to the end of our time, and I still have a couple of the things I want to hit with you. But one thing, just the flip side, the only part of that session that was kind of wrong or just off was reporting, you know, that Otis said that he and I had been buddies and been together a long time and setting our routine before my girlfriend entered the picture, and that's kind of the reverse. I was sort of the newcomer, and they had, you know, been established for a number of years. I mean, I guess that was really the only glitch of note at all, I think the only glitch at all. I mean, how does something like that happen? I mean, percentage-wise, it was minuscule given everything else that you got right, but is that a product of just like a fuzzier image or just something that sometimes happens?
Well, because what we do is not 100%. What I had in my mind was two sets of pictures side by side. Mm-hmm. One was him and your girlfriend, and mm-hmm. one was you and him.
Right.
And so it was in my interpretation of the picture what that meant, that I transposed who was the longest for who was the most important.
Mm, okay. I see. Interesting. Wow. So it's just a slight kind of adjustment, really, I guess, in the interpretation.
It's very slim, and I always say it's in my interpretation of the picture. If I could show you exactly the picture, you would know, but
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
you want me to tell you.
Right. So, and that's where, I guess, again, the questions and the list of information, so you have context for the images that you're seeing.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Monica, well, we're sort of just at the end of our time. I do want to mention to our listeners a couple things. One is that you do have a book out called What Your Animals Tell Me that's available in multiple places, including you have a great, great website that I want to tell everybody about. It's www.petcommunicator.com, and there's all kinds of cool information about you, about the book and other things that are available, and how someone would go about trying to set up their own session with you, whether directly or by email.
Right.
And so it's really great stuff. So, I guess anything else just in our remaining moment, Dr. Monica, that you want to let us know or let our listeners know?
Well, I want them to know that communication is possible and is also necessary to better understand your fur children, like
okay.
I like to call them,
sure.
and that I am here to help them in any way I can. Fortunately for me, but not for them, I am booked with 4, 5, or 6 weeks in advance, and that's because so many people nowadays want to know what their animals are feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So be patient, but we will get together.
Great. All right, Dr. Monica, thank you again so much for joining us on Talking Animals today. And we've already talked about at some point we're going to save our money and have you come over and speak to our other cat, Curtis, who was a feral cat and has a kooky background. We'll have to find out what went on in his early period as well as how he's feeling now. But that's
wonderful.
For another time. So thank you again, Dr. Monica.
It was my pleasure.
All right, take care now.
Bye-bye.
All right, we want to thank again Dr. Monica Dietrich, being our guest today on Talking Animals. And again, her website is petcommunicator.com. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at kuci.org. It's time now to proceed to Name That Animal Tune, which is remarkably like any version of Name That Tune you care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related, usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song title, but occasionally it's a bit more indirect than that, like today, for example. Either way, like most renditions of this game, we can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons, not least that, while of course the game hinges on a song being somewhat recognizable, we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. So with that preamble behind us, but also noting there's a prize, and today, although you'll always have your choice, as we do each week, among the things that we're only offering this time, is a pair of tickets to the Concert for Compassion, which is a benefit for Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty. It's this Sunday at Irvine's Oak Canyon Ranch on March 28th. The lineup includes The Used, Goldfinger, Sugar Colt, Story of the Year, many others, including some members of Good Charlotte. It's $20, and ideally, you know, we'd love to have you go and pay the dough. But to help get the word out, we'll provide one pair of tickets for the first person who calls in to correctly name that animal tune. And here we go. Get down, get down. All right, anyone? Name that animal too? All right. Well, you can still call in at any point. We'll, within reason, and we'll try to assist you. Meanwhile, we have pretty much reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank again Dr. Monica Dietrich for being our guest today on Talking Animals. Again, her website is petcommunicator.com. I also want to thank you all for listening and hope you'll join us next Monday on Talking Animals when our tentatively scheduled guest will be singer-songwriter Nellie Mackay, the teenage sensation whose debut album, Get Away From Me, has only been out a couple of months but has already drawn a boatload of rave reviews and accolades. The album also includes some animal songs, and Nellie is a vocal and emphatic supporter of PETA, so we'll talk music, animals, and activism. So please join us for that next Monday, March 29th, on Talking Animals. Again, I want to urge you to check out our nifty website, talkinganimals.net, and please, when you get there, sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. This is 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks for listening. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. As always, we're going to close things out with an animal-related tune, and one that's a nod to the annual South by Southwest Festival that's been holding forth in Austin the last several days. This is one of the longtime local luminaries on the Austin music scene. It's Daniel Johnston with a song called Fish, KUCI. All right, let's try this real quick, real quick. Oh, too bad. All right, so anyways, this is Fish on KUCI. It's Daniel Johnston. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals. Hi, you're on the air live on Talking Animals at KUCI.
Is the song Jungle Fever?
It is indeed.
Oh, good.
All right, if I can put you on hold because we're really running late, then we'll get you your info for your gift or your prize or your tickets or whatever.
Okay.
Okay, so don't go away.
Thank you.
Okay.
Got me dreaming I could almost win. I stopped to take a look around with a grin. So much turmoil in this crazy town. Got me bloody from hitting the bricks. Is this the way the girlies get their kicks? And now I see if it makes a difference. Everyone in love, hating or each other. Always thinking it's near the end. Then I was hoping she'd be my friend. While I'm forever only wishing again. Oh, to be alive and free from sin. Psycho love in the twilight zone. Drifting so far from the telephone. I get so close, but I don't belong. Straining to identify with the radio song. Then I see her as if in a dream. So real, I could almost scream. She's doing a ritual the same for any man. Just like a movie, it's so deadpan. I'm looking for love in the darkness. I have a chance at false romance. Maybe next time I'll wish for something new. I'm so ashamed, so unglued. I've had enough and you'll never know. I feel like staying but my subconscious says go. Shed a tear like blood on the floor. It's only love and nothing.